It would be helpful to have your own PT guy traveling every week. I know a lot of guys do that, they split that, but just the toll that it takes on your body, I think it is, tough. And if you have somebody who knows you week to week, the PGA Tour does a great job in providing people and resources every week, but week to week they aren't the same people. And so sometimes that can get a little bit tricky when you're getting treatment. So I think in retrospect, that might be something that I would have added.
This is the Tournament Code.
We appreciate you taking the time to join us, Ryan. We're going to talk a little bit about your golf game. You've had some more recent headlines, but also there's some stuff from the past that's pretty interesting insofar as your process is concerned. Before we get to that, I want to talk or want to do what we do for every single one, which is kind of an icebreaker. Putview Books sponsors us. They keep our lights on. And so we do a very quick, what we call the Putview Books opening tee shot. Jack gives us a trivia question, and we all try to guess the answer to it. And then we get rolling on things. So, Jack, what do you have for us today?
Justin Thomas was the seventh player to win 16 times, including multiple majors on the PGA Tour before 32 years old. Who are the other six players to have 16 wins and multiple majors before 32?
Got Tiger.
Tiger.
It's two.
Arnold Palmer.
That is three. Let Cooper cook.
Gary Player.
No, I think he was probably before 1960.
Oh, Greg Norman?
No, not Norman.
It's not Spieth. Spieth hasn't won that many times, has he?
There's a recent one that you should be able to get.
Rory?
That's four.
Jordan?
Not Jordan. The others are older generation. Tiger and Rory, the only two of this generation.
I mean, Byron Nelson.
No, he was probably before.
Virginia.
No. No.
So we have two left, you're saying?
We have two left. They are older generation.
Are we talking 60s or 80s?
More like 70s. One of them used to be a very famous commentator who would like to roast some people's
Johnny
processes
Miller.
On NBC. There we go.
Johnny, good fun.
One more.
Tom Watson?
That's the one.
Oh, wow.
That's six.
Wow,
that's good job, Daniel.
Very nice. Well, that's interesting. And speaking of processes on the golf course, Ryan, I think the first thing I wanted to start with was obviously there's an old article about your process in terms of preparing for golf, in terms of mapping out the golf course and playing it, mapping out the golf course and then playing it. Is that something you still do? Tell us kind of about how that came about.
Yeah, I still do it now. I've always been I've played video games my whole life, and it's just one of these things where I figured out a way to use it to my benefit as a pro. And there's a feature in the game that lets you design courses. And so the internet is a wonderful place where a lot of smart people can figure things out. And I just take advantage of the Google machine. And I found a guy who made a tool that essentially combines, if you look at a Google Maps overlay, like a satellite view, with what's called LiDAR data. And you can put this into this tool and it spits out a golf course for the game. And I started doing it during COVID just because I saw it and there was not a whole lot to do. So I made my home course in New Jersey, thought it was awesome. And then I'm thinking, well, gosh, this would be awesome to do if I could prepare for tournaments. And so I think I played that year without doing it and then picked it up in the winter and really figured it out.
That is cool. What kind of difference do you notice preparing in that way, and how What translates over for you?
I think for me, the thing that translates is everybody that plays, especially competitively, when they get done with a round, you know, they could always say, "Ah, man, I wish if I went back out right now, I would know this, and I would know how to do this, or I knew how this hole was playing, or I would just kind of get a sense for how the round would go." And so I kind of get ahead of that by doing that this way. And so I'm able to replicate the wind direction, the strength of it. Obviously try to make my character hit it similar distances, so I kind of know what to expect club decision wise, and definitely for the pins, you know, I'm able to put the pins in the spots where they're going to be on the greens. And so I think it's just a better understanding of strategy wise walking into the round, you know, where my opportunities are going to be and where opportunities are going to be to make bogey and where I need to probably play more defensive.
For your process, what video game system are you playing on? I assume it's laptop or desktop, but what's the game that you're using?
Yeah, so it's PGA Tour 2K series, and I'm using a laptop. It's the only way to do it. To make the courses like they are. And I should reiterate that these courses are not necessarily a recreation of them, but maybe something similar legally. So I can put that out there.
Understood. What is DPC Sawgrass are some of the names for
On GS Pro.
On Simulator with GS Pro, yeah.
I see you guys are in the know.
Georgia Golf Club. Not Augusta National.
Yeah. those guys who run that whole software and that community of course designers, that is essentially how I came across a lot of the stuff that I've come across now that helps me do all that. Those guys are brilliant. And I see you guys are using that in your own business. So you guys obviously know what's up. But
does a lot of them is named Tech Bud. Is that one of the people that you know?
Yeah, I'm in that Discord. I'm in that Discord with all those guys. Yeah,
that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just throughout the bag that you kind of find that useful in terms of throughout the bag? Is it tee shots, approach shots, around the green? And then also, since obviously you're aware of like simulator usage, do you ever hop on the simulator and play the golf course beforehand as well?
I'm getting there with that. That would be my next project. I don't have enough time to do that right now, but that's going to be a project for the off season coming up to be able to do that. But yeah, it's just, look, I get a general idea of what the day is going to play like. I think hole location wise, it's really crucial. Just understanding what spots you can fire at a pin, where you can't, where to miss. You know, you can look at all that stuff on a satellite, and that's become really popular in the last, you know, 6 years or so. But this is just a little bit better because I can really see what the ground is doing. You know, you're only getting an overhead look. You can't tell where the fairway shaped or kind of what the green is shaped like. Yeah, you can pick a spot on a green, but that might be where a crown is or where a huge slope is. Your ball's never going to sit there. So, yeah, it's just, you know, helps me get an idea of what the day is going to be like.
You played pretty solid this last week. Do you have any specific things that you remember that, you know, how like the video game helped, or is it just part of your normal thing?
I would just say like the par fives, it helps, you know, knowing where to be. I mean, look, it's not like a giant thing. If you play your practice rounds, you know, the golf course, like you kind of know, but the day of, to understand where the pin location is and where the miss is just a little bit cleaner and better is crucial. There was a lot of reachable par fives last week, so just knowing where to be.
Last question on this line, then I have a few other things that are somewhat tangentially related. When it comes to your process with this, like when do you practice or play the video game? Do you play it morning of, night before? What do you do it every single day? What's the deal?
Yeah, usually the pins come out at night, so I put the pins in at night, and then I'll play before I play the next day. What's tough is like the first tee, like I was 7 o'clock on the first round last week. That was early. Usually takes me like 20 to 25 minutes to get through a round, and man, that's an early deal. But yeah, that's usually how it goes.
Another thing, obviously, more recently that you're known for. I don't know. I tape my mouth when I sleep. I don't know if Cooper and Jack, if you guys do. But
done it before.
Done it before. You taped your mouth during a round of golf. Tell us kind of about how that came about. You've got a lot of interesting things you do.
Yeah. Look, I've never been afraid to do anything to play better, and certainly to do anything in a tournament round, you know, that I think is going to improve my performance. I've never been afraid. I've never been a guy that's like, hey, I need to try this a few times at home, or I need to get comfortable with it. I mean, shoot, if it's going to help me, I'm going to do it. So, yeah, I've been using it for sleep for like, 8 months. It's been great. I just figured I've been, you know, having a tough time on the golf course. And I was just like, what if I played without talking? It's certainly good for my breathing at night. Maybe it's good for my breathing on the course. Obviously, the anger was one part of that. But I just thought that it would be a cool exercise. And I used to work with a guy in college. His name was Tim Kramer. And he had this book, Spirit of Golf. And it was a books. It was like a series of drills in this book. And there was a series of drills where you kind of eliminate your senses. So you go out and play with, you know, headphones in, so you can't hear anything. You don't have any music playing in them. And, you know, you go out and you hit some balls blindfolded and you go out and play 9 holes, you know, without talking. And so I guess I took that to the next level with, you know, putting tape over my mouth. But I got to be honest, it was a great activity. It was a great experiment. You know, I've always done a lot of weird things, so that's never bothered me. And I certainly didn't anticipate that it would get covered. Unfortunately, or fortunately, the guy I was playing with, Augusto Nunez, got to within one of the lead with 4 to go. And so out comes the camera crew. I didn't think anything of it. I'm trying to make the cut. And, you know, evidently they were watching. So, you know, got the interview afterwards. And I probably could have explained it better to realize that, you know, I've been using it for sleep instead of just like scotch taping my mouth across, you know, but that's all right. It was a good story. I'm glad everybody enjoyed the comic relief.
I was in the bar and I glanced up and SportsCenter was on, and the headline on SportsCenter was "Pro Golfer Tapes His Mouth Shut During the Round of Golf." I was like, okay, I don't know. I don't know if this is, but it was funny. It's hilarious.
Look, I'm glad that that's the way that I make SportsCenter. I would never have envisioned that as a kid, but. Gosh, I think, you know, overarching, everybody can, who plays golf, you know, can relate to what that's like on the golf course. And so I think for the most part, the golfers, like everybody, you know, understands. And so it's the non-golfers out there that maybe see that and they're like, oh my gosh, that's terrible. But,
what do you think of it?
He was totally fine with it. You know, it made decision making pretty nice. You know, there is no wavering with, you know, is it 8 or 9? It's just like, hey, look, this is the number and this is it. So as an experiment, it was awesome. And honestly, I would encourage people to do it. Just maybe don't do it in a tournament, you know, do it at home first. But it was great to just kind of, you know, you realize how much energy you waste talking. And it just, you know, made every decision a lot clearer. So I certainly am not going to recommend that as a permanent fix, but it was a fun day.
With just those two alone, you have a couple of unique things that you do preparation wise and process wise, which is cool. I know Cooper, Jack, and I have all done unique things. Are there any other unique things that you have as part of your process?
You know, my workouts are a little different. I work out with a guy, Justin James, who's become a close friend of mine. We met in Jacksonville about 5 years ago, and Justin is, you know, one of the best guys in the world in World Long Drive. He won, I think, in 2017 or 2018, World Long Drive Championship. And you know, I would say between him and Kyle, you know, they are both the longest guys in that space. So when I started working out with Justin, it was pretty mind blowing, you know, some of the different things that he was doing, and I was all open to it. But one of the things that he introduced me to is called the rope flow. And he learned it from these guys, Weck Method out in San Diego. And essentially you are using the rope, but you're not jumping it. So you're kind of jumping rope without jumping it, if it makes any sense. It would be hard to explain to you without showing you, but it's a sort of Tai Chi moving with the rope sort of deal where you're moving in space pretty fast, pretty fluidly, and it helps warm me up for a round. Certainly looks nuts. And I did it in the trailers last year and got a bunch of looks, and I've been doing it for a few years. But yeah, rope flow, it's an interesting one. So I do that before I play every day, and just kind of helps me get ready for the round.
I'm trying to envision what that looks like. You're saying you jump rope without jumping over the rope?
You know, I don't really know how to explain it to you unless you looked it up. But
I got it pulled up right here on my phone. And if I had to describe it to you, Cooper, I'll show you. If you're listening on audio, I'll try to describe it. Yeah. Well, it's like swinging the rope around without jumping over it. So it's, I forget what type of jump rope it is where you like swing it right next to yourself. But yeah, it's like swinging under one leg, but never going under two legs sometimes. And then there's other stuff as part of it, it looks like.
Interesting.
Yeah, you're stepping over it, but not actually.
Yeah, there you go. He's got it going on. It. Yeah, that's David Wax. So that's where Justin learned it from. And yeah, interesting cat to say the least. But that was one of the things, you know, that I, like when he first pulled that out, I was like, dude, what is this? Like, I'm not doing this. And now, like, it's awesome. I love it, you know. And it's a great way to just get your mind. For sure. Yeah. Huge with rhythm, huge with, you know, just calibrating your body for the day, just trying to move in through space without, just moving through space without using your mind to kind of get in certain positions. It's not static at all. So you're just kind of, you know, moving around, and it's better than doing jumping jacks or anything like that, you know, to get your cardio up. So
100%. Interesting. You said you work with Justin. He does long drive. Is speed something that you focus on with him, or is speed something you focus on in your game? What do your workouts look like relative to all of that?
Justin is now up in Charlotte. He's moved out of here now, but yeah, when he was down here, we were just working out in his garage, and he had all of his supplies there, and we would go out to the park, and it was great. You know, felt like one of my favorite movies is Rocky, and it felt like we were kind of doing that sort of training, and I absolutely loved it. And so, yeah, speed has been something I've focused on for, I would call it, 6-7 years. I started working with an instructor, Bernie Najjar, in about 2017. And, you know, if you're listening to this, good chance you're a golf nerd and you're into, you know, distance and ball speed. And so my ball speed was 158, 159 when I came to him. And, you know, I actually hit 189 in Savannah. And so I've gotten unbelievably longer. And that's a credit to Bernie. It's also a credit to Justin for helping me over this time. So yeah, it's a multitude of things. Look, I try to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. There isn't one thing that I could tell you like, hey, look, this was the one deal that I did. You know, it was just a bunch of things that we have done over the years. And yeah.
So I know you've been a pro for just over 10 years. You've played on pretty much any tour that there is that's affiliated with the PGA. So I'd just like you to kind of talk about an overview of your career, path to the PGA Tour, and where you're at now.
You know, I've been a pro for 11 years almost. It feels, gosh, saying that out loud is crazy, but yeah, I played 2 years in PGA Tour Canada. Starting out, I went to Q school as an amateur while I was in college, and made it through and played that summer out there. Didn't keep my card, but was close and had to go back. The following year, finally got through again, didn't keep my card again. And so I spent the next, you know, 6-7 months really taking a hard look at what I was doing as a pro, if it was really worth it. I wasn't excelling as much as I would have liked. I think when I turned pro, I had this very, you know, you call it naive, but I had this short-sighted look like, hey, all right, I'll play Canada, or, you know, it's called America's now, and then I'll go to the Corn Ferry Tour, and then I'll get my PGA Tour cards. Just take 3-4 years. And after 2 years of not getting through, you know, essentially double A, I took a hard look at myself and what I was doing. And that's when I found Bernie, and we started doing a lot of work on my game. And so subsequently I started Monday qualifying into Corn Ferry events. And in 2016, so that year afterwards, I went to Europe to try Q school, had a great week going in second stage and missed by one, and missed my flight to get back to Corn Ferry Q school. And so was left with nothing while playing really good. Decided to go to Asia with a friend of mine, made it through Asian Tour Q school over in Thailand. We were there for 3 weeks through Christmas and New Year's, which was quite the experience. And I played that season over there commuting from New Jersey, which was insane. I can't believe that I did that. I would not be able to do that now. And so I learned a lot about myself going over there so many times. A couple years after that, did not keep my Asian Tour card that year in 2017. Didn't make it through Q school again, and, you know, just kept playing a lot of the Mondays for the Corn Ferry Tour. And in 2018, had a outside chance at the last event of the year to get some status. I finished eighth. I needed like a sixth, and finished, I think, 110th, which was just outside of conditional status. Went back to Q school, missed the following year, finally made it through Q school, but finished so badly that I was never going to get any starts. So I went to play Latin America, had a good week, and then we had COVID hit. First event back on the Corn Ferry Tour on Monday qualified, played well the next week, and, you know, played out there for, I guess, the next 3 years. Came close, essentially finished 27 3 years in a row. I finished 27 in the playoffs the first year, to miss my card, didn't play the tour championship because I got COVID. So I wasn't able to basically finish that week or, you know, do anything to improve my positioning, which was brutal to sit there in a hotel room and watch people achieve their dreams while I couldn't do anything about it. Luckily, I was not so sick that, you know, I had to go to the hospital or anything, but that was a tough week. And then the next year was set up towards the end of the season to, you know, to get my card. I was inside top 25 going to the last event and missed the cut by one. And then finally broke through in 2023. Finished 27. There was just five more cards, honestly. That year it was 30. So, yeah, I played the PGA Tour last year, and now I'm back to the Corn Ferry Tour. So I know that's a bit of a drag on there, but it's hard to explain 11 years so quickly. It's been a lot.
It sounds like, you know, we know lots of people who've gone out and tried, and a lot of them are still out there trying, and a lot of them also decided that that's that. It seems like for you, the initial part, you had a lot of effort and were doing, you know, what was necessary maybe, but the results weren't there. And then in the past 5 years, things have kind of come together more for you. And also it seems like you might have refocused them in terms of the things that you were focusing on and trying to optimize for. Do you think there's any difference between the past 5 years versus the previous 5 years in terms of your focus? Or do you think it's just, you know, took time, got better, random chance, anything like that?
No, I mean, totally. Yeah, every year's gotten I've practiced harder than I have before. I've, you know, talked to more people about what I could do to get better. Bernie and I are alike in that as a teacher, he's always wanting to improve. And I'm always wanting to improve as a player. And so a lot of these last 5 years in the off season, we have kind of done some trips together to kind of get some more information, whether it be going out to TPI to spend time with Greg Rose and those guys out there. Or, you know, we would go and do some club stuff. You know, at the time he was with BXG, so we went out there and did a whole lot of testing with them. And so, yeah, every year we've kind of tried to learn something in the off season. What can we do to get better? What can I do to get better? But also, you know, I think for him it was kind of a fun project to go learn something else for him too. And so, yeah, every year I've tried to figure out something that I can do better.
You talk to certain people and they say, you know, they talk about the difference between like America's Korn Ferry, PGA Tour, say like it's a huge step up to Korn Ferry. And then even from that, it's a huge step up to the PGA Tour. And then you know, talk to other people and they say, you know, the line is extremely thin between all of those levels. Like, where do you fall when it comes to the differences between the tours?
I can't speak to America's because I haven't played out there since 2020. So I don't know what that's like. I'll say that the Korn Ferry Tour at the top, I would say the top 50 players are interchangeable with the PGA Tour week in and week out. And there's no difference. And yeah, the PGA Tour is just anybody in the field can win. Anybody, you know, and I think that's the case on the Korn Ferry Tour too. You know, you see guys that Monday qualify and they win. You know, I think a few years ago it was Hayden Buckley who got in, and obviously, you know, he's on the PGA Tour now. But yeah, it's super, just the tour is just, you know, you are battling not only the player, but you're also battling everybody's team. And so on the Korn Ferry Tour, there's certainly people have teams. A lot of the young kids are so prepared now, but you know, there's less data, right? There's no shot link. For us this year, there is just less of that. And so on the PGA Tour, you're playing against guys who are so talented. They have great coaching. They're getting the best information every week. And so it's like you're battling a whole lot more than just, I think, on the Korn Ferry Tour or America's, where it's just, hey, let's go out and play and see who's the best. You know, it's more of a, you're playing against everybody's business as a, you know, entity. And so that's just a lot more difficult.
Did you add people to your team when you got to PGA?
Not really. I mean, I had a few years where I was so close to getting my card. And so I knew that I was doing the right things. And I knew I didn't want to really change a whole lot when I got there. You know, like I felt like I didn't want to add anything new. In retrospect, you know, I think it would be helpful to have your own PT guy traveling every week. I know a lot of guys do that. They split that. But just the toll that it takes on your body, I think it is, you know, tough. And if you have somebody who knows you week to week, you know, the PGA Tour does a great job in providing people and resources every week, but week to week, they aren't the same people. And so sometimes that can get a little bit tricky when you're getting treatment. So I think in retrospect, that might be something that I would have added, but yeah, that's about it.
So talking about recovery, and we've talked about you're a huge world traveler when it comes to golf. You've played everywhere all across the world. The start to this Korn Ferry Tour is an absolutely insane travel schedule. Can you just talk about, you know, your experience and how you take care of your body doing these crazy flights to South America and back and the Caribbean and back and just playing week to week across the world?
Yeah, it's tough. Outside of the U.S., it's tough to get the resources you need to recover, right? First of all, you're battling all these airlines. You don't want to travel too much stuff because then you're not going to get it. You know, your bag might be overweight and then they don't put it on the plane. And that's a whole other thing that is just a disaster. So you can't really travel with all the things that you want to travel with that you might be able to in the States. you know, if you're doing like, you know, cold plunging has become so popular, it's easy to find a place to do that. Or it's easy to just go out and get a garbage can and get some ice. Like, you know, it's not a big deal. But like if you're in Colombia or, you know, wherever, like they might have something, but they might not. And it's just tough to get all of those same resources when you're outside of the country. So, you know, sleep is tremendously huge in those first, you know, stretch of events. Doing whatever you can to get some good sleep is hard. And so sometimes guys will book Airbnbs and you know, maybe they don't have AC or whatever. That's something that you learn over time. Traveling is, you know, like, hey, look, I might save a few $100, but I mean, what's the cost to my performance here? You know, if I can't know if things are going to be, you know, good enough where I'm staying. So it's difficult. And there are no like real secrets other than trying to be as hydrated as you can and try to get sleep. Those are the two things that you can always control internationally. And, you know, anything else would be a bonus.
What things do you do to make sure that you're hydrated enough and get enough sleep?
I have a sleep mask that I wear at night and I use a fan app all the time. I just try to create the same conditions, whether I'm here or wherever. And that was something that I did when I played in Asia. I had like a sleep playlist on the plane and I would only listen to those songs when I wanted to sleep. And over time, it really helped me be able to sleep on the planes. And so, yeah, sleeping, I try to get it as cold as possible. I use a sleep mask. I use the tape. And if I am like watching anything at night, I use like those crazy looking red glasses. And, you know, it helps. So, yeah, those are the things I do there. And then hydration wise, like I have a couple of brands that I like to use. And I tried so many of them. Like I've gone to the store and I just like I've tried 25 different electrolytes. And so there's a few that I like to use and I use them and, you know, you can get them anywhere, but if I can't get them internationally, I travel with them.
What are the distinguishing factors for you when choosing your electrolytes in terms of, you know, if there's 25, you try it out, there's a few you thought were better than others. What was made the difference for you?
The additional sugars is a total wipeout. Like as soon as I see that, the added sugars, that's out. I think for me personally, like the super high sodium ones, like, I mean, like I'm not running a, you know, triathlon. I'm not like losing that much sweat. I mean, there are certainly weeks where you're really sweating. You know, certainly chili can be really hot and dry. But like there are a couple brands out there that are super high in sodium. It's like, yeah, that's cool. But like, I'm not, you know, I'm not going on a 20-mile bike run today. I'm just going to walk. So I think something that isn't super high in sodium for me makes me feel like normal. But, you know, besides that, I'm looking for something that, you know, is just like when I go, I mean, honestly, when I go to pee, it's just not super yellow. I mean, that's an old coach of mine. In college, he used to help us out. He was like, look, the best thing that you can do to keep track of your hydration is just like when you go pee, just notice what the color is. And if, you know, you want to get it closer to clear, that means you're more hydrated. And if it's super brown, then, you know, you need to drink more and hydrate more. And so, you know, that's how I measure the bar.
That's very cool. It seems like as far as your process, not your pee necessarily being very cool, but the process in terms of how you get there is pretty cool. And it seems like a lot of stuff about your game is well thought out. And if you had to describe, I think at least my perspective, I think the other guys kind of look at it as everybody has, you know, some sort of advantage. Like all the players on the tours generally are good. And it, like they're good. They're all around good. Like you're not generally on there and bad in some area. But there's some defining feature, especially the players that elevate themselves, where they're very good in X field. There's something that puts them above the rest and not and some of them okay are all around world class, and they end up being, you know, top 10 in the OWGR, something like that. But even then, on the climb up, there's something that there's one thing that separates them compared to others. Like the other week at Augusta, Rory's putting wasn't great, and he's not necessarily a great putter in terms of things. But there's other things that keep him separated. If you had to look at your game, what do you think are some of the defining features that say this is where my comparative advantage is?
I'm going to correct you because everybody on the PGA Tour is a great putter, and I will go to war with anybody who thinks that they're not. The pins are so difficult. The greens are so fast and challenging every week. So I'm not going to let you slide on that. But
no disagreement.
Especially Rory, guys, you know, one of the best in the world. Whatever. Yeah, I think. Look, I was never the best junior golfer, and I was never, you know, like it took me a while to become the best in my county. I was never really the best in my state. I mean, for maybe a brief period of time towards the end, I was. And the same thing in college. Like, it was the same thing. I never got to like top 100 in golf stat or anything like that. But I have prided myself on trying to, you know, do all the little things that might help me get, you know, 0.0 whatever better. And so that's why I love the game so much, is because there's so many things to do for that. And so I so love going down these holes of, oh gosh, you know, like if this thing can, you know, make me a little bit better, then I'm for it. So certainly the strength of my game has probably been my short game in putting for a while, for the majority of my career, even going back to my amateur days. And so, you know, I play with a 10 finger grip, and I can certainly hit some shots out there on the golf course with my irons, you know, definitely a little more creative than maybe some other guys. So, you know, that kind of has been my strength for a while.
Do you continuously work on your putting, or is that just something that you've always done well and comes naturally to you?
No, I've always worked on it. And there was a period for those 2 years where I barely missed out on getting my PGA Tour card, where I felt like that was holding me back. I had been hitting it so good, and I tried to improve my golf swing so much that I, you know, kind of ignored that. And so I went on a journey of probably consulting with about 10 different putting coaches over the course of 4 or 5 months. And, you know, just went and took all of their information and advice. And I came back here to Jacksonville, and I, you know, we had a few months off, and I just kind of honestly locked myself in here. And I was like, look, I'm going to figure this out, and I'm not really going to go out and play another event until I figure out how to putt well. So I think for me, my putting has been really, really improved the last 2.5 years. And I actually took something from a darts coach in Europe who was teaching guys using this board, essentially getting their eyes lined up with the specific part of the board that they would want to throw the dart to. And so it would be if you had a cardboard box and you drew a line on the cardboard box with the cardboard box upside down. And, you know, if you were looking at the box, you're trying to get that line to match up the whole time. And so it was essentially getting my eyes over the ball in the same spot every time. And so at this point, I've actually got a friend who's got a 3D printer. And over the last year and a half, we've been printing up some prototypes, and I've been using it to putt with, and it's been tremendous. So, yeah, putting was one of those things that I've always been good at, but I felt like I kind of put it to the wayside for a bit, and now it's very strong.
What do you think the key to your putting is? Is it just getting your eyes in the right spot, or you went to 10 different instructors and kind of did a tour. What did you come out with of it all?
It was really helpful. You know, I think, look, I'm the type of guy that can do that. I can take all the information and disseminate it and say, hey, look, okay, this is good. That's not good. I'm going to throw that out. I'm going to keep this. Or, you know, what's the common themes here? And I would equate it to anything else. When you play other sports, when you shoot a basketball, you're looking at the rim and your eye's pretty close to where your release point is. And it'd be the same thing in darts. It would be when everybody looks at a putt, they walk behind the ball and they always look with their dominant eye down the line. It's just that because we stand to the side of the ball and putting that it becomes so weird and things don't look right. And so I had a problem seeing straight. I couldn't see straight. And every single instructor tried to get me to see straight and I couldn't see it. And I would put coins down on the ground. We tried so many things. And so finally, the thing that made the most sense was to put an alignment stick up in the air and to be able to essentially look through that on my target line. And so it would be kind of putting if you could imagine a string line and then putting an alignment stick straight up through the middle of the string line and getting those two to overlay. That way, you know, your eyes are on the target line. And so my setup has just gotten super consistent with that. And, you know, so I just practice repping out, putting a gate in front of me and getting my eyes in the same spot, you know, thousands of times. And, you know, it's helped my setup get a lot cleaner.
So with your setup and getting your vision aligned straight, is that a daily like check? You're doing 5 minutes to start every practice. You're getting that, you're seeing that perfect straight. So you see straight the same every single day.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. It's great. I use it on breaking putts, you know, on side slopes. You know, you could imagine what, I mean, you guys play, so you know, like when there's, when you got a big breaker, you know, you've got to get in your setup a little differently versus a straight putt. You know, I mean, I see a lot of guys practicing, you know, straight 5-footers. Well, that's great, but I don't know. Not every putt's 5 feet straight. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always practicing using, you know, this device that we've created, and I use it on breaking putts. I use it every day. You know, it's got a gate that is connected to it. So I know that I'm starting it online. And yeah, it's been awesome.
Are you going to patent it and market it?
We got our patent recently. Well, it's patent pending, I should say.
You filed your provisional.
Right. And yeah, I think we might have sold a couple. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not the real brains. I mean, I gave an idea of what I want, but the real brains is my partner there. And so he's got, you know, he's designed indoor putting greens. He's done all this stuff. He's brilliant with the 3D printer. And it's amazing what you can do now with all that stuff with golf. So it's really cool to make something, you know, come to life so quickly now, you know, that can help improve your game.
100%. I have a 3D printer and started in right before COVID in 2020, not to make it about me, but right before COVID in 2020, I bought a 3D printer. I was in law school. I taught myself how to sew and started making leather golf head covers. And then that year I was a little bit bored and I was like, all right, I'm going to buy a 3D printer and figure out how all this works. And COVID hits. Next thing you know, people wearing masks, they need stuff to keep their masks off their ears. And I won't go through all the details, but I built something to keep it off people's ears. And I was like, oh, I'll list like a 10 pack of these on eBay. And it took me about 4 hours to print a 10 pack of them. And by the end, I listed on a Sunday. By the end of that Sunday night, I had orders for 8 of them, which meant I had 32 hours worth of orders. So I bought 2 to 3 more. I bought, at the end of the day, I think I ended up with 4 3D printers, and I was selling a decent bit for about a week to 3-week span. And so I'd wake up, or like I'd be running it every 4 hours. So at 8 p.m., throw on a batch, have an alarm clock for midnight, wake up, turn on another batch, wake up at 4 a.m., put on another batch, and just keep rolling throughout the day in order to get them out on time. It was super fun. That was kind of my baptism into doing that. And so then all of a sudden there are lots of other things. I still have one of them in the room over for me, and I use it for various things. But it is, yeah, very cool, the types of things you make for personal life, but especially golf. There are lots of opportunities there to prototype stuff out that you just don't have with normal, you know, plastic manufacturer, where you have to build a $10,000 mold in order to see if the idea even like somewhat works, or if you're in metal, any sort of milling you have to do. It is a lot. So that's cool that you guys do that. I'm interested to see what it looks like, for sure.
Yeah, we might be able to get you one.
That would be cool. We talked about putting, we've talked about everything else, but I want to jump back to speed and how you're getting your speed and what your goal is in terms of the right speed for yourself. What do you kind of see as, you got to 189 over in Savannah, what do you kind of see as optimal for yourself? And then for the game as a whole, if I'm a 18-year-old or 16-year-old and I want to play at a high level, is there a speed minimum that I need to be hitting these days?
The speed minimum I wouldn't know about per se now. It'd be a better question for Bernie. But, you know, there are, the main gist is like, look, you can get any of the products that are out there. Ultimately, you just need to practice swinging fast. It doesn't matter what the product is. And there are, you know, there are some great products out there, but it doesn't, they essentially, you know, like if you just take your own driver and swing fast, it's, you know, the same thing. And so, you know, you need to ignore the ball flight and just hit it hard. And so we have done a lot of different things. We've played music. We've, you know, like drank a little caffeine and gone to hit. And, you know, like my best ball speed I've ever gotten was in Savannah a couple weeks ago. And I'm going to be honest, like I haven't done a whole lot of speed training this year, but it was one of those deals. I was a little bit ticked coming off the last green, and I was just like, okay, well, how can I use this in a positive way? You know, I don't want to break my putter. I don't want to do anything stupid. And so I was like, all right, we're going and hit it hard. And I went to the driving range and like was so fast, you know? And so like,
what'd you get?
Honestly, it was just like the first ball, you know. So previously, I would say in practice, you know, my personal best was 185. And I think I had a couple of drives last year at 186 or 187 on shot link. But, you know, I hadn't touched that in a while. And the first ball was like 184. And I'm like, oh, man, this is awesome. You know, like this is a little secret. And so, you know, it's just like you got to get your nervous system going. Justin Wood, sometimes he would take an alignment stick and kind of like hit me in the back, not obviously hard. And I wouldn't recommend people like do that, but like, it's just like, it speaks to like the way that you need to get your nervous system firing, you know? And so, you know, like maybe I haven't tried it, but I would assume if you jump in a cold plunge and then come right out and start hitting drivers, it might be pretty fast. So, yeah, you just need to get over like where the ball is going. Like all these guys swinging into a screen, you know, that are trying to gain speed. I mean, that's the deal. You got to ignore where the ball's going when you're doing that. So the only thing that I would say that, you know, if you're doing so much of it without a golf club, is that it can kind of like negatively impact your club path. So if you've got something that's on the end of a shaft that isn't a club and you're swinging it in a way that's, you know, maybe not really how you would swing a golf club, that's probably not going to be great when you get a golf club in your hand.
I think it would make you go end out.
Probably. So yeah, that's something that you just got to watch out for, but shoot. Yeah. It's ultimately about the nervous system firing.
I feel like we've covered a lot about your process with basically every part of the game, workouts, recovery, et cetera. Is there anything that you're doing for mental training that might be unique?
I mean, shoot, the tape was unique, but, you know, I've certainly read many books. I have worked with different psychologists before, have all been very helpful. I'm sitting in a room here that I have in my place in Jacksonville, and one of my friends nicknamed it the Get Great Room. And it was a room where, I don't know if you've seen that little picture of, I think it's from It's Sunny in Philadelphia with the guy in front of the board, and it's all like scratched all over the place. You know, that's essentially what I did one winter, really two winters in a row, where I just wrote everything out on this huge whiteboard in this room. And I just put it all up to easily see it. And I put up all my favorite quotes, and I would keep on, you know, like putting quotes up on the wall, and I just pinned them all. And it was like a really bright room. And so I just would like come in here, you know, and just look at some of my notes and some of the quotes that I had up on the wall, and, you know, try to create some inspiration sometimes when I wasn't feeling great. And so, you know, that was something that I did that, I mean, everybody that's been to my place here, I haven't tried to hide it. And so it's in this other bedroom, and they walk in, they're like, oh my gosh, what's this? And so, you know, that was something that I did that I really enjoyed doing. And I think, you know, it was for those couple of years I was meditating in here and just trying to, you know, absorb all that, you know, all the quotes and everything that I had up on the wall, and just tried to keep adding to it. And so, yeah, that was a fun project that I did that helped out.
What's the normal day of work look like for you in Jacksonville? Like, if you're just going to go all day long.
I got a mat and a net in the living room right now that I put up about 2 months ago. That was new. We took down the ceiling fan. I'm pretty sure my apartment complex is not going to be watching this, so that's okay to say. But I'm just hitting wedges and short irons. So that's a new fun thing for me. You know, look, it depends on if I'm in a tournament week or an off week. Off weeks, it just depends on how my body's feeling. I always try to check in with my team and, you know, just try to touch base with everyone on how I'm feeling and how I'm doing. And so, you know, I like to go out and play late in the day. It's always been a thing for me growing up. The son of a club pro, my dad, you know, the only time he had to play was after the pro shop closed. And so I've always enjoyed going out at 5 o'clock at night and going to play. So most of my practice will be done during the day. And then I like to go out and play in a cart until dark. So that's at home. And it's, you know, it's sort of similar in a tournament week where I like to go out late Tuesdays. You know, like to be out there late in the day. It can be so hectic. You got 150 some odd guys trying to play a golf course on a Monday, Tuesday to get ready for a tournament before the Pro-Am Wednesday. It is a circus. And so I enjoy going out late in the day, Tuesday, usually a little calmer, just, you know, just a nice vibe out there.
Very cool. Well, we appreciate you joining us. The last question we ask every guest is the same. Which is, if you could go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be?
I would say to, you know, keep the faith and always keep improving.
Excellent. Where can people find you on social media, follow along, all that fun stuff?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. I don't even know what the handle is. That's terrible. That's how active I am. Yeah, McCormick Ryan. I think there's an underscore in there. I think it's similar on Twitter. I don't have Facebook. I don't have a YouTube. I'm not in the YouTube game yet, but maybe soon.
At least not yet. Well, if you are listening to us on YouTube right now, make sure to like, subscribe. Same thing on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. And if you're trying to find us on social media, we do know our handle, which is the Tournament Code, and on Twitter /X at Tournament Code. As always, we appreciate you joining us and look forward to diving in deeper to what it takes to play Elite Tournament Golf.